Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of HC, a Third Culture Kid, where I, Third Culture Kid, share my thoughts, experiences, and conversations. It has been a while because I shipped my microphone all over across the country, so I didn't have access to my microphone. I tried recording a podcast episode with some cheap earphones, but the audio quality was so bad I decided not to publish it. So instead, in this episode, I'm going to pack that episode that I recorded earlier but went unpublished into this episode, such that the like the three primary events that I'm going to talk about in this podcast episode, which spans like a month and a half of just an emotional, physical, mental roller coaster. I'm just going to talk about my move to New York, preparing for my move to New York. So the preparation, moving to New York, the move to New York itself, and just the shock and just all the adjustments and the things I had to deal with. And then third, my orientation. I'll give a recap on the orientation and just kind of the culture, I think, that I'm getting into in law school and the people. But yeah, so prep to New York, move to New York, orientation. All right, let's start. The prep to go to New York was very busy. What could have been maybe 3 days of me just selecting an on-campus housing option turned out for me to be like a two to three week race, frantic search for an off-campus option and an expensive one. I ended up finding an apartment for about $2,400. I had put a holding deposit down for a unit that was like $1,500. I just realized a little bit lately, everything was so unfamiliar, but everything was going so fast in the New York real estate market that I just had to make a quick decision. And that meant putting a holding deposit of $500 down to secure a place. But after some more thought, it was just way too far from Columbia Law School, and that was probably not going to be good for me. So instead, and I'm glad I, now that I'm in Columbia right now and in New York, I'm glad that I chose this place instead. That's much closer. So I had to go through that kind of headache, and even finding this $2,400 place, which is actually not bad. I heard there's on-campus studios that are going for like $2,500. This is like graduate housing options, and that's $2,500. So me finding a $2,400 place made me feel good about this this option. That said, to get to find this unit, I had to sift through like hundreds, I'm exaggerating, but 70 places, maybe 50 places. I had to text, email so many brokers only to hear back that, you know, the place is already sold. There's just so much work going on. I had to be very aggressive with getting in touch with the brokers, and that meant like sharing information about like my income and other things. So it's just so that I signal to them that I'm a good candidate. And that's not something I did in California. So that was a kind of like a mentally exhausting process, and also one of anxiety, because I secured an apartment like in July 27th or something, or just around like end of July. And that was like kind of pretty close to orientation when I had to start like going to Columbia Law School. So yeah, I was on a time crunch, and that made me anxious. And I wanted to make sure I found a good place, and I wasn't sure. So all that added to my anxiety. So it was a time of anxiety. And then on top of that, the financial cost for getting a place in New York, I was just surprised. I'm like, I had a rental unit that's 440 square feet-ish, and I'm paying $2,400. That is even with a rent concession, meaning I would have paid more. So I'm getting a discounted rental price for this unit, which I guess I can consider myself lucky for that. But still, $2,400 for somebody that's going to be a law school student with no income, yeah, it's a tough pill to swallow. Anyway, so that's the rent that I have to pay on a monthly basis. But on top of that, this shocked me initially when I heard about this. But there's a broker's fee that you have to pay. It's a one-time fee that you pay if a broker that you're working with to find a rental unit matches you with a realty property that might be managed by some sort of corporate management company or the landlord. And that broker's fee is 15% of the annual rent. So if I pay $2,400, I need to the annual amount for $2,400 a month would be 2,400 times 12, whatever that is. I'm not going to do the math. And then times 15% of that, I had to pay the broker that much. That came to about like $4,300. It's a lot of money. So me having to pay someone for maybe putting in like 4 hours of work, I don't know, 6 hours of work for finding a unit that matches my specifications. Yeah, it's very valuable for me, I guess. But really, it wasn't, the work that itself wasn't that complex, I think. But there's so much demand for real estate markets that there is an advantage, I guess, you get from a broker being able to match you to a property and secure that property for you ahead of anybody else. So there is value, but just the amount of work that I'm paying for, $4,000 just seemed like so much money for somebody just matching a sheet of facts about a property to matching my preferences for a unit. Boom, maybe helping me with my application a little bit, doing some paperwork. And that like largely was like the service that I was paying for. During this time of prepping my New York, I felt regret or fear or apprehension about my decision because I was living through, I anticipated that there would be some costs, of course, in paying for law school, but I had never spent that much money in that short span of time, really. And I was continued to going to spend that much more money because of tuition and whatnot. And that living through the expenditure of costs had me start to apprehend and doubt like whether the costs that I'm incurring right now justify the benefits and the value that I'm going to get from a law school education. But I think this is a case of me just living so much in the present, and it's a temporary thing. And at the moment, I'm incurring costs, but in the future, I'm going to reap the benefits. But because I'm so present with the costs at the moment, there's nothing, but it's just natural that it's going to preoccupy my frame of mind. And that's what it was. The costs preoccupied my frame of mind, so weigh a lot more heavily than the benefits that I would reap from a law school education, but in the future. I was in that frame of mind of apprehension, doubt, whether this is all these costs are worth it, because I was in a way tearing my life down in California, preparing to tear my life down in California to go to New York. So all just the costs, dismantling, preoccupied my frame of mind, and paying the broker's fee, finding a rental unit was all part of that machinery that created these costs that I was incurring. And then, you know, after I found the unit, I had to prepare to move everything. I don't know when I secured the unit to be exact. I said a certain date, but I don't know if that's accurate now, not anymore. But another thing I had to do was move everything, all my belongings, to New York. And what I chose to do was use this service called U-Box. And what that is it's a service by U-Haul, a very, I think, well-known moving company. And U-Haul would deliver a box, a big box, I don't know the dimensions, but a big box to your residence. And then they would leave it for a few days so that you can pack all your stuff in it. And then they would take that box, use one of their transportation options. I think it was a truck. And they would just take that box all the way across country. Did they use a plane? I don't know. They would take it all the way across country to the designated location that you specified. And then they would deliver to your residence afterwards, to your new residence. So that's the service I used. I was surprised it was a wooden box. I thought it'd be some sort of steel box. So I was a little antsy about that, but I mean, if it's a service that they've been running for a while, I guess the experience that they have and the true and tried time of them being up to run that service should assured me that this was going to work. And I'm here right now with all my stuff, a lot of it unpacked, and it worked. So just to my pleasant surprise, everything was intact. But that service cost in total maybe $3,000. So that already was also a lot of money. It was cheaper than some other options. I think the next alternative cheapest option, which I looked into, was like Pods Container. Now their container, now that I think about it, was probably more secure. It was like, it looked like it was made of metal or steel, and it was a little bigger. It was a struggle, like just putting everything into this U-Box container because I was playing so much Tetris on it to move things around, and that really tired me out. It was so tiring moving everything. So I had all this physical exhaustion that I'm also experiencing that just puts me in a frame of mind of being preoccupied with the costs and expenditures that I'm spending on preparing for the law school education, which contributed to this sense of like anxiety and apprehension that I had. Anyway, what was I saying? Oh yeah, U-Box container, pods was the next best option. That was like $3,900, I believe, for one box. Maybe it was $4,000. So a U-Box to me was the most affordable option. I think there was another option that like cited me like a quota of like $8,000. Man, the range of the different delivery options was astounding. What is like a range of $4,000 at least? Wait, so $3,000? Yeah, $5,000. That's a huge range. That's a Either there are significant differences in the value or just businesses are not really great at pricing so that they capture customers. So that's the service I did. But it's the whole process of packing. Oh, man, I had to scramble to pack as well. I think I packed over like a week. Over a course of 7 days, I packed everything. There's just so much stuff to pack, even now that I've unpacked everything, there are a few things I still didn't pack too. Just moving all your life and belongings across the country, it's a tall task. So you mean like finding a place to rent, packing all that. Yeah, it was just very taxing and put me in a frame of mind of I'm preening myself here. But yeah, put me in a frame of mind of just thinking about the cost and really just whether this was all worth it. But I had to assure myself, you know, I had to assure myself and remind myself of the dream of being able to like represent people, fight injustices. And that was what I was going to law school for. And that I decided way before that was a dream worth pursuing despite the cost. So I had to think a little bit ahead, but even that had some limited assurance because I knew because of some of the debt that I was going to take on to pay for law school, that my short-term outlook after law school would be characterized by paying down law school debt. It would be consumed more. My short-term outlook was going to be defined more by a financial concern of mine rather than a personal aspiration, a more fulfilling aspiration. So my short-term outlook wasn't that fulfilling. And that also, I think, that's why it didn't quite offset as well and effectively as I would have liked the costs I was incurring at the time, the moving, all the paying I had to do to like move and find a place to rent. And also just knowing that I eventually, even after all that, like paying down my law school debt, I knew that I would be able to pursue my personal aspirations, you know, and 2 years is not that long in the grand scheme of things. But knowing that my time horizon was extended to be able to get to that point was not an easy pill to swallow. But another lesson I learned, I think, especially, you know, now that I'm here, everything's unpacked, you know, I've been to orientation, I'm seeing the community that I'll be in, I'm kind of seeing glimpses of the future, I'm feeling better now. But I think all this lessons, not lessons, but the lesson that I kind of take away from this is that it may be important to live in the present. It was very important for me to live in the present at the time when I was moving and everything, because I had to be really engaged. I had to work with a sense of urgency in finding a place. I had to be very present with packing everything. That's what I had to preoccupy myself with to be able to get to the next step. So I had to live in the present, but only seeing the present sometimes was not good. Only seeing and thinking that there's no future past this. Not thinking that there's no future past this, but not seeing the future past this, only seeing the present and choosing to see the present was not good for me because the present at that time was just filled with all the expenditures and costs, both financial, physical, and emotional costs that came at the time with moving. But if I see the present, the future, and maybe even the past, my resolve and how I've came to the resolve of going to law school and the rationale behind it, that's in the past. That's something that I formed in the past. So seeing the other parts of the timeline gave me some assurance and helped me look past what was difficult in the present. So that was a lesson, live in the present, but when it's difficult, don't only see the present, see beyond it. And that's kind of a summary of the turmoil and the toil that I went through in preparing to move to New York. I was also taking PTO during the time, so I had some time, but yeah, I took work off my plate, but I knew that I'm going to have to put in my notice very soon. So that's something that maybe I'll talk about in this podcast episode, but I put in my notice after I arrived in New York. Anyway, like I said, there's going to be three events that I'm covering in this podcast episode. Just covered the moving and the preparing part. No, not the moving, preparing, just the preparing part. So come around mid-August, I arrive in New York. My girlfriend is here to help out as well, too. She's just the sweetest. She's the sweetest. And it was definitely not, I think, easy. Even though it was us two, it was not just one person, but us two just moving everything and adjusting. That was not easy. So I'm truly grateful for her. But yeah, when I moved here, the apartment itself was a little smaller than I expected. But everything fit. The internet was not set up so that I could set it up, so I had to ask a technician to come. The apartment itself was not entirely clean. The toilet bowl had pee stains in it, and to put it bluntly, shit stains as well on the toilet bowl. And I was just surprised by this. I think what was happening was, so I started my lease at the beginning of the month, but I moved my move-in date to later in the middle of the month. And so the apartment was technically, even though it was leased to me, it was vacant. I wasn't in it yet for a few weeks. And I think one of the doormen just went in. This is something I think the property management thinks happened. Just came in and used the toilet bowl. We don't know who used the toilet bowl or anything, that shocked me. And I was like, wow, this place has not been clean. And also there were just some other like smudges and yeah, some dirty stuff here and there. Some of the vents were really dusty. So I had my doubts as to whether this place was clean. So I had to deal with that. I saw a roach as well in one of the places. I saw a roach in the kitchen. So that with the pee stains. And I was like, wow, maybe this place is not sanitary. So I was like ready to whip out the lease, a site clause, blah, 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 for unsanitary conditions. And I was just about to lose it because I was like, you know, these are unsanitary conditions. Yeah. So I just had to deal with all of that. And on top of that, I had my belongings coming in. So at this point, you know, I've talked to management. They're going to bring in an exterminator to deal with the issue. They're also going to look at the dishwasher also had issues, like it was broken. I had a technician that's going to be looking at internet, but I also have my belongings coming in, but I didn't want my belongings to get in the way of the exterminator and also the internet because if it takes up too much space, maybe the technician's not going to be able to get the wires. All these different like issues going around in my head that I had to resolve. I mean, fast forward right now, you know, everything looks good, but I had to juggle so many things and that was very stressful. On top of that, I sprained my ankle the very day before, like less than 24 hours before I had to fly into New York. So I was going to be working at a handicapped capacity and that was going to put more burden on my girlfriend, which, you know, it really sucks. I feel really bad about that, but also very grateful. So many complicating issues. So that was tough. All things considered though, especially now in hindsight, after I've set up the apartment and everything, the fact that the apartment is the way it is right now, given my experience here so far, I'm surprised that I found this place sight unseen as well. Like, I never visited this place. I did see it by video a little bit, but it's different when you see it in person. So I consider myself somewhat lucky to have found this place sight unseen. So I pat myself and thank the world for this, at least this somewhat fortunate. I consider myself fortunate for at least that aspect of the unit, having it all worked out, you know, and fitting everything. And it's pretty quiet too, so I'm glad. And it's like close to the laundry room too, so yeah, there are things to be grateful about for sure. But there are things about New York when I moved here that was still a shock to me. One, the weather was pretty humid, very humid. It reminded me of Brazil to a large extent. Korea, I think, is way too humid, so it wasn't that bad, but it was, I think, as humid as Brazil, so I was surprised by that. I was also surprised to see rats. Pests are a serious, I think, issue in New York, much more of a concern and presence than it is in California. So that was something I've heard, and then I've actually seen rats on the subway and the park, also just a block away. So that's something I have put on my radar and my it's an alert in my head that I'm gonna have to keep an eye on this, keep my place clean. More so, never ever is a dish gonna be sitting dirty in the sink, kind of like mentality. And then businesses, people, they throw their trash on the street. But so let me qualify that a little bit. So they'll put it in like big trash bags, and then there'll just be mounds of those trash bags on the street. Well, at least it's packed and wrapped. But in California, I think what they would do, they would put it in a dumpster. So they would wrap all the trash in a plastic bag, and then they would also put it in like a metal dumpster, which is way cleaner in my opinion. So seeing just all the trash on the street was like a surprise to me. Maybe the fact that it doesn't like pile up excessively probably means that somebody's collecting the trash every day. So that's good. But that was kind of a shocker to me. And then, so the rats, the trash. On a good note, the food here, I think on average, is better than the Bay Area. The food here, I think on average, was better than the Bay Area on average. I went to eat out with my girlfriend a little bit. You know, she was helping out with the moving as well. But she's taking PTO to help me out too. So we got to also have fun. And to do that, we ate out a few times. We went to Koreatown, Lower Manhattan. Some of this geography might not make sense to you, but to different places in New York, New York is a very dynamic city, and I guess that's one of its advantages and things to enjoy about it. But going back to the food, the Korean food that we tried was really good. We had this we brunch at a different place too. It was really good. Considering the number of places that we went to and the proportion of these number of places that we enjoyed, on average, though, I think the food is better than the Bay Area. And also, I think it's slightly, ever so slightly cheaper than the Bay Area. So that was a pleasant surprise. What else did I have to adjust to in New York? Oh, yeah, but I'm talking about what happened, but I do want to add the backdrop of all this was, or what I talked about how tough it was with moving, and I feel like I haven't done enough justice to just how toiling it was, because I summarized it. But I won't go into detail, but I do want to add that all this, I mentioned that preparing for the move added to my sense of like apprehension and doubt. Well, moving in this apartment, and finding the apartment at the state it was initially added even more to my sense of like doubt and anxiety. It's like, was this the right move? Like there's just so many obstacles that I'm having to go through to even like start my law school education. I don't, it shouldn't be that hard. It was my thought in my head. And I'm like, I'm paying $2,400 for this kind of place. You know, now that I'm looking at it, talking to different people, maybe I got a good deal. But still coming from where I was coming from, I was like, wow. Yeah, I lived in a two-bed unit. Now I'm living in a studio. So I think the adjustment. But the fact that the price I was paying, I'd be paying more here from my pocket. So all that. Just obstacles, financial costs. It was just all piling up, and then adding more to that sense of like apprehension. and doubt whether this was my right move, seeing the mountain of costs that I was incurring. And then on top of that, I had to do all the fixing, cleaning. And that was just what filled the road ahead for me, just the obstacles. But yeah, I just powered through. At this point, I was getting close to the point of not, I don't ever consider point of no return. I think if I really want to just go back to my life in California, I could have, even though it would have been costly. But I was just getting so close to the past, a point of like, I'm starting law school soon. Like going back now, just without seeing what law school is like, might just really be a very foolish and irrational decision that's driven by fear and unproductive emotion. What else about my coming here to New York that I wanted to mention? And the neighborhood doesn't feel entirely safe. I don't think I'm gonna like go out at night too much. Like when you come out of the subway, I think there was one night we came out of the subway, we were trying to walk back home. You know, we haven't gotten mugged or anything, and I don't think we were in like serious danger ever. But my girlfriend and I were coming back home from New York restaurant, took the subway. Now, as soon as we step out, there's like a fight breaking out. I think I heard glass breaking. So not an entirely safe neighborhood. You know, there's the streets are dark a little bit. There are like a few people that might be just hanging out in front of buildings. And also handicapped. So I didn't feel like I was fully capable of protecting myself too. And then, of course, the past of the tragedies that we've heard about and we know about regarding Columbia Law students, how a Columbia Law student, I think it was 2019, got stabbed around Morningside Park. Yeah, all that, what we're seeing, the events that transpired, colored our perception that the neighborhood is not entirely safe. So, yeah, luckily our building has a camera and there's a doorman, so I feel safe in this apartment, but, like, going out, like even the block out, I don't know if I feel entirely safe. All right, so that's the my initial thoughts on the New York experience. There's definitely a lot of buzz. Actually, yeah, I'll add a little bit more. There's definitely a lot of buzz, a lot of energy, especially when you go into like, especially Koreatown was just so packed. The people here are, I think, nice. You know, the property manager was nice. Generally, the service in restaurants was really good too. When we walk our dog, you know, people would talk to us a little bit, strike up nice conversations. I think people overall are nice. Yeah, I think there's a reputation that New York people are rude. That hasn't been my experience really, but there is that buzz. Like it's always buzzing, I feel, the city, and that's part of the reputation I think of New York. And so far, my experience aligns with that reputation. It's both good and bad, I think. Sometimes, you know, I just want to rest. But it's good that having a buzz, that in itself kind of feeds energy, I think, for people. And it certainly does for me to an extent. So that's on New York. Now on to orientation for law school. So it was a 3-day event at Columbia Law School. Each day, gave me new experiences and new kind of like, yeah, it gave me new experiences and realizations. So on the first day, it was just, I think, setting the tone for law school, sharing the philosophy, sharing themes from the authorities at Columbia Law School, the deans, guest speakers, to set the tone, I think, for law school and setting the frame of mind for us. The messages in the first day were really more of like, I think primarily it was like about making friends and how the friends and the peers and that you meet at law school, many of the friends are going to be your lifelong friends. And I've heard multiple like people were presenting the deans and the guest speaker saying this. I think the dean, like the big dean, should probably see it. I should probably know the word better. The big dean or the top of the, there's many like associate deans and then there's like one dean. So to me, it gets kind of confusing, but you know, the dean the dean of all deans, kind of, she said, was that her or was that someone else? God, I forget. So one of the deans said the theme that they're reminded of for this class was a renaissance, like a sort of rebirth. And immediately my mind was like, oh, okay, I guess the timing of that fits the description for our class, because this is like, we're one of the classes after COVID. So it's class of 2022. So class admitted at 2021. And you know, we're still kind of in the thick of COVID, I guess. And, you know, lockdown procedures are not lockdown. Work from home and other kind of like COVID restrictions are just being lifted, but not entirely, I guess. But now we're in 2022, and this class, COVID restrictions are more completely removed. So given the time, the world, and the phases that the world was going through and the phase that we're in, that translates to the entering class in 2022 to be one of a rebirth, I guess. So yeah, characterized a little bit by rebirth. So that was discussed as a theme. What else? The guest speaker that came in the orientation was very interesting. I really liked his message, and just his stories too. I think he was a Columbia Law School. He must have been a Columbia Law School alumni. But he's like a partner at WilmerHale. Shared some incredible stories about his brother, like starting a business and then selling it for like $540 million as well too. Loved his anecdotes, but a lot of them, some of the messages and overall themes that I think he mentioned was how, this was the first time I think I heard someone say this during orientation, was how being a lawyer is a noble, you're used to be, or should be, a noble service. So I think when I first wanted to be a lawyer, that was part of why I wanted to be a lawyer, because it had a reputation of being a noble service, and the reason, and it's more the reasons of it being a noble service that I think enticed me to the profession too. You know, protecting against injustices, giving a voice to the people or representing people. So him saying nobility reminded me of all those fulfilling reasons, and characteristics of becoming a lawyer. So that was nice to hear from, especially from someone who has a lot more experience. He also emphasized to chill out, that it's going to work out. A lot of his anecdotes that he was sharing was to support that message. Like, it's all going to work out, you know, whether you're in the law review or not, whether you get really good grades or not, you know, it's all going to work out. So he emphasized relaxing, which I thought was an important message. And carries more weight given his background. There was also discussion, I don't know if it was this speaker, but another theme was just about building a professional reputation. Thinking about law school as like the beginnings of building a professional reputation. There's a lot of also messages, not on the first day, but also on the second day, of how like you want to reflect yourself well. You don't want to go like happy hour and like do terrible things. Or you don't want to be a dick to another law school student, because, you know, the colleagues that you're going to have here in law school are also going to be your colleagues beyond law school as well, too. The legal field is very small, and people are going to remember things that you do at the law school, most likely. So this idea of building a professional reputation and how it starts now at law school was expressed. Yeah, so that was the first day of orientation. Just setting the tone, sharing the themes of the class of 2025, about the pursuit of our legal education. Yeah, just grand, noble, fulfilling messages that were supposed to, I think, did inspire many of us. Second day, I got to know my classmates a little bit better. There was like a team building event, which I really enjoyed. You know, just we talked about like what our aspirations are for this class. There's a game that we play where we're trying to solve how long it would take to build a certain tower. It was like a puzzle. It reminded me a lot of logic games. And then just, you know, seeing how my classmates solved the problem too was very fun. You know, I think everybody had strengths, and seeing that those strengths on display was fun. Seeing what what kind of like principles and ideas drive my law school classmates was inspiring and great to see. So it was a lot of meeting a lot of new people. But it's, it really runs the, not the gamut, but I met a lot of people, I think, that wanted to go to law school because there was no other recourse that was as profitable as becoming a lawyer. Because if you go to a big law firm as a lawyer, you're going to make about $215,000. But there was a lot of people, I think, when I talked to them and discussed like why they wanted to do law, it's because there was not much other recourse. I mean, literally, I think somebody said like, yeah, if I had a job right now that was paying like 140K or more, they would not go to law school. So yeah, but there, that was not everybody's answer was that, of course. The answers varied, but there was this undertone of if there was another recourse besides law school, they may have gone to that. What else? It was hard to meet someone. On the second day, I did not meet anyone really that had my years of experience, which also translates to was as old as I was. I'm like 30 now. And I didn't meet anyone on the second day that was as old or older than I was. And I know people are going to say, like, don't feel uncomfortable about that. And it's not that I felt uncomfortable. But there was a sense that I was like, oh, I feel like I am in a different place. And I might, a sense of being behind a little bit. I sense that a little bit. And that's okay. I don't want anybody convincing me that I shouldn't feel that way. It is to an extent true. People, their law career is going to start sooner than I am. So just looking at the facts and objectively describing it, I am going to be, quote unquote, somewhat behind. But I guess you can make the case, and I believe it. I'd be ahead in other things as well too, especially having some experience in the work, knowing what I want, and having experienced a career that's different than law as well. I guess that's nice as well. But yeah, there were a lot of these much younger people that I met. Everybody was generally nice, I think. Everybody that I talked to communicated well. Yeah, so that's what you'd expect as a lawyer or as lawyers. People seem smart. On average, a lot of people seem pretty smart. And that was also inspiring for me. I think that's going to challenge me to also to try to be as intelligent as possible. When I say that, I also think about like that's going to try to push me to want to read law closely. I'm going to be challenged with my own thoughts as well. Seeing all that promised or held the promise of exciting intellectual conversations and endeavors and, so that was interesting. What else? Yeah, I was talking about, I shared that I was working at Meta/Facebook to a few folks, and I think a lot of them, some of the folks were like, why would you leave, you know? And going back to the point about like, if there was no alternative, if there was an alternative recourse besides law school that they would go, that's also high paying, they would go. Some of these, the people that I talked to that had that sort of mindset, I think, or had that rationale, were more surprised that I would leave law school. Meta/Facebook. You know, I didn't get paid as high as a big law salary, but you know, I can't say I was dissatisfied. I just realizing the frame of mind, of people and their motivation to go to law school definitely varies, and with the people that I spoke to so far, certainly felt like an anomaly Yeah. There was also, I think, just, yeah, every time there was a lot of surprise, I think, when I told people that I worked for 8 years. I think, yeah, the class over on average, maybe younger than maybe, I will see. Yeah, well, that'll come out in the statistics for Columbia Law School. But I was like, based on so far the people I've talked to, I wouldn't be surprised if like the average age of the incoming class was like 25. I wouldn't be surprised. Maybe that's always been the case. Yeah, okay, maybe that's always been the case. Maybe I was expecting more like 27, but maybe it's always been 25, and this year it's going to be 25. Apparently, the age gap from the youngest to the oldest in the class is 19 years old. So, assuming the youngest is around like 20 years old, then the oldest would be 39. But I haven't yet met the 39-year-old student. So yeah, that was the second day. Third day, just chill. There was this one session that you had to go to regarding like creating a healthy law school community and preventing sexual harassment. There was a lot of training that we went through in preventing sexual harassment. All necessary, but I think all just very indicative that we or the law school recognizes that human nature is prone and inclined to sexual behaviors. Like, there's no class about like, oh, don't in the Columbia, yeah, we didn't have sessions about like, guys, don't forget that you should really try to work hard and achieve in Columbia Law School. And there are many reasons for why they wouldn't share that session or they wouldn't have that session. But one of the reasons I imagine would be that our natural inclination might be to achieve and really try as hard, so you don't need to be reminded that don't forget to, work hard and achieve. Instead, more of the message was like, chill out, guys. The reading is not gonna be that. You don't have to read that hard in your first 2 weeks because it's a pass fail class. They're pass fail classes anyway. But for sexual harassment, just seeing the number of sessions that we've had, like we had, I think I count at least three trainings I had in sexual harassment. I think also is an indicator or that Columbia Law School believes, recognizes that our natural inclination as just inclination as human beings, maybe young human beings on average, maybe to engage in sexual behaviors. And some of them might not be acceptable if we were left to our own devices without any sort of guidelines and regulation. Hence, a lot of sexual harassment trainings. Oh yeah, there was a free food truck fair that was the last day, which is today. When that was really, really cool. Like, I would just show my badge and then we'd just get free food from this truck, the food truck. I had a lobster roll, I had some cool waffles, I had some sliders, fusion tacos. Yeah, it was great. And I talked to more people as well too. I met a few Korean folks, so I talked in Korean a little bit. That felt nice. Every time I talk in a different language with somebody, I just feel like I'm transported to kind of a different reality. Yeah. But all in all, orientation I think got me into a better frame of mind of approaching law school. I've already started some reading. It's like there's like 88 pages of reading due, like by was it Friday? It's a pass fail class, so I might not like read too hard. I was a little daunted by it, but after like 10 pages of reading it, I got pretty engaged. I think it's there's some interesting stuff in this. And some of the stuff I'm reading is, I think, is a little controversial or could be controversial, but we're here to challenge our thinking, right? We need to challenge some of the traditional thoughts and principles. Yeah, we're here to examine everything because the more we examine, the more deeply that we examine, the better the answers that we find generally. But yeah, I liked orientation. It was fun. Got to meet a lot of people. Oh yeah, people go to like drinking. Like It was like a happy hour almost every day since orientation started, and I didn't go to a single one yet. I was just so tired after everything, all the move and whatnot. Like, I slept late to try to like unpack and stuff, so I didn't go. So I just met people like during the normal course of orientation. But yeah, you know, people are smart, respectful, different. So that was cool. What else? I feel I leave with a lot of themes to think about and charged and fueled with inspirational messages. Yeah. All I need now is a little bit more sleep. Okay, I think that's I'm going to wrap that up. Thanks for listening, guys. And I hope to do this more regularly now that I have my microphone, but I am going to be fighting and trying to manage against the demands of law school. But I will try to get on the mic and continue this. All right, thanks, guys. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed, don't forget to subscribe. You can follow me also on Instagram with I can't believe I'm not saying this smoother, but follow me on Instagram at HD_TCK. The next episode, I might talk about like my departure from Facebook and Meta, and just my reflections on it. Yeah. All right. Thanks, guys. Talk to you later. Bye.